Hey, I just realized something. Two of the three people that are about to be heard are Packer fans.
Yeah.
We need to break down the 32 minutes of Aaron Rodgers yesterday. Maybe go in depth on his opening statement of about 6 minutes.
We can.
He had a nice little six-month football hiatus. Worked out pretty good for him. Let's welcome in from Hail Varsity, the magazine, hailvarsity.com. Jacob Padilla, are you happy the number 12 is back?
Oh, definitely. I have not, for my own mental health, and I just have not really been paying attention to the daily updates and the leaks and the reports and all this stuff. I just didn't find much value in that. I was just kind of waiting for this time when they figure out what the next step was going to be. And I'm glad they worked it out. I mean, just with all the difficulties and with the incentives both sides, I'd never thought that he'd be gone this year, but it's good to know that can lock in at least for this season and then see whatever happens after that.
Is this Super Bowl or bust? Because this might be it.
Yeah, I think so. It's been Super Bowl or bust for, or should have been for the Packers for a while now. When you've got a player like Aaron Rodgers, and last year, obviously they got pretty close. And unfortunately with their cap situation, they haven't been able to make significant moves, but they're close enough that if they can do a few things a little bit better, improve some on the margin, but they should have a chance to be right in the mix again.
Hey, this will be the last one of the Packers, and we'll move on to some other things. 13-3 back-to-back years under Matt LaFleur. Does it feel like 13-3? Have the Packers overachieved or underachieved? Or been what you thought they would be?
Yeah, I think they've been right about where they should be. Obviously, the first year that they kind of had, they had some close game luck that you can't always assume is going to stay that way. But that was also the transition year, as they were, Rodgers and LaFleur were kind of figuring each other out and finding, all right, what's the best way for us to be successful together? And we saw that last year where they did kind of figure things out, and the result was an MVP year from Aaron Rodgers. So I feel like they're right where they should be. They're one of the best teams in the NFL. They've got some playmakers on both sides of the ball. They obviously one of the best quarterbacks, one of the best receivers, one of the best left tackles. Got a really good running back, one of the best cornerbacks. They've got some really good individual talent. It's just a matter of the key this year will be kind of the defensive changes and kind of how can they make progress from last year with the changes they made on that side of the ball.
Put your Packer hat on and your journalist hat on. Would you like to see more press conferences like Aaron Rodgers delivered yesterday? Not the incredible parts where he subtly went after the organization, but a press conference from an athlete or a coach, general manager, owner, president, whatever, that there's no cliches or BS. It's pretty straightforward. It's no liar, liar. It's this is what happened. This is it. There's no gray area. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened.
Yeah, I don't know what I expected from his first press conference, but it certainly wasn't that. He was a heck of a lot more candid and open about the whole situation than I thought he'd be. But that being said, what's he have to lose at this point? Mm-hmm. He's been quiet throughout this entire ordeal. Like you said, they've kind of been working on it behind the scenes, and no reason for him to go out talking to the media during that, even if it would have been to kind of shoot down some of the rumors. But now he gets to come out, say his piece, put everything out there, and kind of put it behind him, move on, and get ready for the season. So I think it was a good move by him to kind of address everything right now to try to get it out of the way, so it's not something that keeps popping up. I mean, it obviously will. It's not necessarily going away, but I think he answered just about everything he could answer. So there's not really a whole lot of ground to touch on. He laid out where he was coming from and what he thinks, answered a lot of questions about it, and now he's ready to move on and kind of see what they can do this next season in Green Bay.
And the last weekend was it for the live period, so the AAU season is over. When you come on here, we talk about all the other teams. I'm going to give you an opportunity to brag about the team that you coached this year that wrapped up this past weekend in Kansas City.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's a really good group of kids. And I got 7 players back from last summer and added 3 new ones this year. And between the last 2 years, we are 52-13.
Wow.
So it's a pretty good group there. And I've got some good players. A few of these guys will be making an impact at the varsity level this season. And I'm looking forward to getting out and watching these guys play because they work so hard. And the reason we had success is just because they bought into the way I wanted them to play. And they played together on both ends. We weren't the most physically talented. We were undersized compared to a lot of teams, but nobody over 6'3". But guys worked hard together, gave me everything they had, and the success that followed is a result of that.
Now let's talk about the big picture of AAU basketball. It was another successful year in the state of Nebraska, boys and girls, and at all kinds of different levels. We focus a lot on the 17s because they are the next step to go to college, but 16, 15, all the way down, there's really, really good basketball throughout the entire state, whether it starts here in Omaha with the OSA program to Lincoln Supreme and throughout. But if you're looking at the 17s, and you could even, because you saw a lot of the 16s as well, who are some of the players you think their stock rose after the month of July?
Definitely Josiah Dostler, getting a chance to play in front of coaches for the first time, really, because as a 15U player last year, with no live periods, that just didn't happen. So this year, he got a chance to go out there and play in front of coaches and picked up a few offers, and I think he's going to have a lot more coaches following him throughout this high school season and in the next summer. Both Isaac Trout and Jason Green getting a chance, they already had offers to begin with, but getting a chance to get out there and play in front of coaches again, I think that kind of restarted Jason Green's recruitment a little bit, allowed a few more teams to kind of jump in the mix. And then Isaac, obviously the offers continue to flow in, but again, just getting a chance to see, to play in front of all those coaches, the ones that have offered him, some new ones that have been following along, picked up a few offers along the way. It was just kind of, I'm so happy for these kids that they got the opportunity to play in front of these coaches. So those are a few. I mean, obviously there's a lot of kids that picked up some offers, at all levels. We're talking D2, NAIA, I think the Jack Hostrider and Brady Christensen for the Lincoln Supreme National 1 team, both picked up a few Division 2 offers after having a really good spring and summer. They were kind of just role players. Like Jack barely played, averaged 2, 3, 4 points a game for Pius off the bench this year. And he was their go-to guy this spring, and now he's got UNK, Washburn, a few others interested. And Christensen kind of in the same boat. A guy that kind of really is drawing NAI interest now and received his first offer recently and just had a really good spring and summer is David Harmon from Miller North, playing for the OSA National Beck team. He was just a monster every time I saw him play, and that team had a really good season as well, and he was a driving force behind it. So there's a lot of kids at all different levels that didn't get a chance to kind of get the exposure to coaches last year that they have this year, and now we're seeing the offers follow.
Walk me through Jaden Dawson, because the AAU basketball will sometimes get a negative tone towards it. It's expensive. Families pour a lot of resources into it, but they're doing it for their kids, and you get to play against really good competition. You get to be seen. You get the opportunity to have your college paid for, which would be great as a parent. Jaden Dawson took off in the spring and then in the summer. Walk me through the journey on Jacob, how you think he got to where he was at Central, a good player, to ending up at the end game is at the end of the summer, he says yes to go play at Loyola of Chicago.
Yeah, Jay's a guy that obviously could shoot the ball coming out of middle school and going to Central. And he's a guy that played a little bit early on, but they had some older guards, obviously. And so he's kind of waiting his turn. And as a sophomore, he had really efficient, good year. But, again, they had other guys that were getting a lot of shots, and he just kind of filled in where he could. As a junior this last year, again, they still had some seniors, but he kind of asserted himself more, and he continued to improve and added more than just the jump shot to his game. Now he's 6'4", long arms, really bouncy, kind of grown into the ideal kind of shooting guard prospect for the next level. And this spring and summer, he just played really well and continued to kind of show that improvement. He is not afraid of attacking the basket and trying to dunk on you no matter where he's taken off from. And the jump shot is still there. So he's just really done a good job to round out his game, become kind of a three-level type of scorer that can make plays on defense with his length. And you got a handful of offers that followed. Obviously, he committed to Loyola, following St. Thomas there, and that's a really good offer. South Dakota State, Drake, George Mason, Indiana State, UMass have all kind of offered over the last couple of months. So he's one of those guys that I thought had a chance to really blow up. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I thought he had a chance to maybe attract even a little bit more attention than he ended up did in terms of offers. But instead of kind of waiting to see if anything else would come, he felt comfortable with that Loyola offer and what he was hearing from them and pulled the trigger.
Doesn't matter what you need. You're just going to draft the best player. Who are you drafting tonight?
Cade Cunningham. Where the game is now, it's just jumbo wing primary initiators are the most valuable players in the league, and guys that really know how to play, guys that can shoot, can make plays for others, and have the size to kind of hold their own on defense. And that's exactly what Cade Cunningham is. Evan Mobley is a really good prospect as well. You got Jalen Green that a lot of people are interested in, but for my money, I think Cade's the guy that I think is a safe bet to be a really good player coming out of this draft.
How much do you think and I know there's the Doncic comparisons just because of his size, but how much of an advantage is him being a 6'8 guard? You know, he can kind of, we saw at Oklahoma State, he can carry an offense single-handedly with his scoring, and he's a good facilitator. But how much, in the way that the NBA is now, you know, where we're looking for shot creators and lead guards, how much of an advantage will it be for him being a 6'8" guard?
Yeah, because that gives you all kinds of lineup versatility. We've seen it for years with LeBron, and obviously Cade Cunningham is not LeBron. Nobody's that kind of freak athlete in addition to the incredibly high level of understanding of the game. But just having a guy that can operate as your point guard, as your main creator, that can defend multiple positions. You can play maybe a smaller guard that isn't a traditional point guard mm-hmm. with him. You can put a guy out there that can really shoot the ball, can spread the floor, can score when you need to. And defensively, you can still be sound, kind of 1-5 with. So it just provides you more options, I think, in terms of lineups. When you've got a guy like that can be your kind of go-to guy, but then can turn around and defend 2, 3, 4, maybe even survive on 5s and some switches or whatever. It's just a lot harder to target guys when you've got that kind of versatility in your lineup.
See, I think people in Detroit will riot if they don't take Cade Cunningham, which would lead them to pick number 2, where Houston, you get the feeling they're locked into Jalen Green. I think the top 3 picks have been the same for a long time, so maybe it takes away some of the intrigue of the draft. But you could have Jalen Green go at 2. Kuminga could go maybe Golden State at 7. Maybe he goes Memphis 10th, somewhere in between. But both those guys are out of the G League Ignite. Preps to pros, those two go in the top 10. What kind of an impact does it have on the next Jalen Green or Kuminga that's sitting in high school right now?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think we need a little bit more of a sample size to see. It's hard to know kind of, all right, is this helping or hurting guys? Because Green coming in, he was 1 or 2 guy in that class, and he's kind of in the same point that he would have been probably mm-hmm. had he played in college. And Kuminga, I think he's sliding a little bit, but he probably would have slid as well had he played in college and kind of showed some of the same weaknesses that people are questioning right now. So I think they'll continue to kind of beef up that Ignite program. Obviously, last year it was even more difficult with the pandemic and having to kind of control that situation a little bit more. Maybe didn't play as many games as they would have otherwise, or against as many different types of opponents. So I think it'll continue to establish itself as a viable route for select guys that are kind of ready for that environment. But I don't know that Jalen Green going to right now is a case of where now everybody's going to go mm-hmm. to the Ignite program, because we got Deshaun Nix, who you're not hearing much about him, is another guy that went there. Isaiah Todd, I think, is the other one that chose G League over going yes. to Michigan, I believe. He's a guy that you haven't really heard a lot about. So it's not like guys went into that and everybody's going to be a lottery pick coming out. I think for the most part, everybody's about where they would have been, whether they went to college or not.
All right, let's shift to the news today, because all of our summer is over. Football is back. A position group or the assistant coach of that position group that you think has to have a big 4 weeks to get his group ready to play on August 28th?
It's probably Ryan Held, I think, just based on the lack of ability to have your full group and kind of figure things out in the spring. I think offensive line is probably the most important, but it seems like Greg Austin has a good feel for that group already, and he likes what he has. I think we know who the most likely starters are and the key backups are, and he's got some young guys, so it'll be important for those guys to continue to log great reps and build on top of each other. So the tackles in particular are ready to kind of be a difference maker down in and down out. But in terms of kind of figuring everything out, and I think Ryan Held in the running back room is going to have to have a huge fall camp, just because of all the time they lost out in the spring for various guys with injuries throughout that room.
What if Gabe Irvin isn't the starter? Why do you think he didn't continue what he did in the spring and then grab the job? And if he's not the number one guy, who do you think is?
Yeah, I struggled to make sense of what's real and what's not in the spring in terms of guys that are getting praise. Every year you hear about guys that end up not playing a significant role in the fall. Mm-hmm. And that, not to say that, they played that much worse in fall camp or whatever. It's just they were the best of the available options, or they were asked about specifically, or it's just coaches wanted to give some young guys some praise for the hard work they've been doing, so they threw their name out there. So it's always kind of hard to sift through, all right, what's real in terms of, all right, this guy is actually going to play versus what's just kind of talk. Mm-hmm. So it varies. Like Gabe Irvin could get out there and be like the fourth back, and very well not be the case where he fell off. It's just other guys got healthy and kind of other guys are a little bit more experienced, and he just didn't beat out those other guys. So their running back is probably the one that I'm having the most difficulty kind of figuring out. Because I think they have talked about Irvin a little bit differently than they have young guys in the past. So that it could point to there being some real fire here from that smoke. But you've got, Marquis Stepp, at this point, it's hard to know what you're going to get out of him. I mean, I think Marvin Scott is the most experienced back in that room in terms of at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I think you could probably, I wouldn't be shocked to see him go out there and take the first carry of the season out of the backfield, just as kind of the guy that is a little bit more established. But this could be a case where the guy getting the most carry in game one isn't the same one getting the most carry in game seven.
I agree with you. So you don't think that any time during the next 4 weeks we'll hear the word, we need a bell cow at running back?
I'm sure we'll hear that for sure. I think I think the coaches would like to have a guy that they can lean on. I think that's what they've always wanted to a certain degree. Obviously, at Central Florida, they didn't try to run a guy into the ground. They had their guy kind of they leaned on over 1,000 yard back, but it limited his carry. So I don't necessarily know that they're looking for a guy that that'll carry it 25 times a game. They want to be able to kind of keep that workload low enough to keep the guy fresh, but they do want a guy that they can rely on. That all right, we got to go. He's going to get us started, and he's going to be the one to finish it off for us.
I think
I just don't know that they've seen enough to be able to say, all right, this is that guy.
It's either a good situation for Ryan Held or an uncomfortable situation. But it's not like you don't have enough guys that can carry the football. I mean, you got six guys at least that are part of the equation. And you have to figure out if Stepp is healthy and can make it through an entire season. Let's shift to this. Final question here. Because we'll hear, I think, from Adrian Martinez today. And, you know, we haven't heard much from him. But he's definitely got some confidence. I think I've said this, I think he's at peace with his career at Nebraska, that this might be it. And I'm going to go out the way I want to go out. And I understand everything that goes into it. I want to leave here on a good note. I want to prove to people this is who I am. We know that on this team, he's the number one guy, or at least I believe this, Jacob. He's the number one guy that single-handedly could lift this team up to a win or two or three more. If there's another guy that you would put near Adrian Martinez, that if they play really, really well, that they could also lift this team up, that maybe could be a factor in one or two more wins?
That's a difficult one.
And you can, and you know what? And I asked that question. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You could also say, I don't see another guy with the impact that he has on this team.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. It's interesting to think about. And I don't know if there's one guy, but I think you could point to the offensive line as a unit. Because if those guys are doing their job, then you need less heroics from Adrian Martinez. And if they're doing their job, then you can get a reliable running game, which makes that offense that much harder to defend. So if the offensive line can be really consistent, really solid, I think that changes things for the offense because it allows you to be more balanced. It allows you to kind of stay on schedule and just kind of do what you do as opposed to needing any one guy to go be a hero. And I think that's kind of been the problem with Adrian Martinez the last couple of years is they've needed him to do too much based on what he had around him and kind of the circumstances the team found itself in. And he just, when he tried to do that, that's kind of when the bad decisions and turnovers and all that came. So if you can just be solid up front in that offensive line as a unit, if those guys can kind of live up to the height, you've got some kind of blue chip prospects playing on that line now. Then that makes things so much easier for everybody else and makes it less important that any one guy is really, really good.
What you said, can you apply that to the offensive identity where for 3 years they tried to do either be a hero, either the guy that's calling the plays or the focus of the offense, that if they're just make plays and be simple and play within the offense, that might be the way to go in year number four, kind of what you just described Adrian Martinez in his fourth year?
Yeah, and I think that's where they need to go. And with what they've got coming back defensively, they should be able to hold their own on that end and to where you don't need to score 35 a game to go be successful. You shouldn't. Hopefully, if the defense is doing the job, they're not playing from behind as much, where you have to speed things up. And not obviously they want to play fast, but you want to play fast to where it's an advantage and not something that you're forced to do. So I think with the way this team is set up, if the defense lives up to expectations, if the receivers can be kind of what we think they can be with some moratory coming in and a couple of emerging Oliver Martin, maybe Omar Manning, where you can spread it around and lessen the importance of any one player, then I think that's where you have a chance to finally find that consistency that Nebraska's been lacking throughout the Frost tenure and beyond.
Well, plenty to talk about in the next 4 weeks. Jacob, as always, I appreciate it. Congratulations on a successful AAU season. Enjoy the NBA draft tonight. I could ask you, and maybe you just respond later on Twitter, is there, because the talent has been upgraded in both Lincoln and Omaha, is there a future first-round draft pick in the NBA playing in this state this upcoming year? I'll let you think on that. Maybe we'll talk about that next Thursday.
All right, sounds good.
Hey, Jacob, it's Jacob Bedilla from Hail Varsity. They've got a lot of coverage, of course, of today with Media Day and then camp opening up tomorrow. You can find it on HailVarsity.com. If you have not picked up their yearbook, it is a must-read. It's got great articles from Jacob and the other members of the crew of Hail Varsity. Ben Stille is on the cover. It's got great graphics and, of course, what you get with Hail Varsity, some fantastic pictures. All right, 11:33. Some of the stuff that I just asked Jacob, we'll get into about Nebraska football. Year number four. Can we get away from whose offense is it? Can it just be Nebraska's offense? Does it have to be the head coach's offense? Does it have to be the OC's offense? Do they fight over the offense? Can it ever just be Nebraska's offense, which would mean establishing an identity and sticking with that? Plus, there are players to watch that it's go time. If it doesn't work out now, they'll still be around, but can you rely on them? We've got a list of who those players are that are to watch and also time to prove themselves. Dive into that as we roll till 2. It's also a local music Thursday on the Gary Sharp Show with George on 1620 The Zone.